Blog Talk Radio.
Clap your hands for Angela.
Okay, so that was
some of your family was that way. So I understand now how you became part of a gang.
I was 13 years old, and I was actually approached in Wildwood, New Jersey, you know, because, I first started my own set, which was the Collins Lake Spritz, until I had went to Atlanta, Wildwood, New Jersey, and I met some people that was from California that came down there, and they was watching me for a while and finally jumped me in. And with that, you know, I had to put in some work as a young kid, stealing cars, robbery, selling drugs, things of that nature, and it just progressed from there. So, you know, once I had my 33 seconds to jump in, I was put on.
Okay. Okay. So what happened to make you change your life? What happened in your life to make you know that this was not the life that you were meant to lead, that there was something different and better for you? What happened in your life to make you change your life?
Well, in May 5th of 96, approximately 12:30 in the afternoon, I got into a shootout. I was actually shot still in the car, you know, because that was my biggest moneymaker, was steal cars. I was the type of person where you walk in the store, as you walking in, your car is pulling off down the street. So I was caught in the car, and I was shot, you know, three times point-blank range. I was hit in the upper right thigh, the upper left thigh, just below my left kidney, and I had my right calf blown out, which put me in a coma for several months. Tracheotomy, colostomy, feed and tube, dialysis, right side of my body was paralyzed. 20% of my lower intestines was taken out. 20% of my right leg thigh muscle was taken out. And finally, I had my leg amputated about 4 inches below my kneecap. With that, I went through rehab and all that. I still went back to the street, you know, gangbanging from a wheelchair, selling drugs from a wheelchair, crutches or whatever I had to do. My actual changing point, my breaking point, came a couple years later when my oldest daughter, it was around Christmas time, and my oldest daughter was like, well, Daddy, you know what I prayed for? And I was like, well, you know, I'm going to buy you some toys, so don't worry about it. You know, and she was like, no, I pray nobody tries to murder you again. And I looked her in her face, and, I mean, God really got his point across then. So I was kind of joking with God, like, if you want me out of this and if you want me to change and if I'm a child of yours, you know, take me away from everything and everybody that I know. And a month later, I wound up in Lawton, Oklahoma, you know, where the process started of me changing my life.
Okay, that's wonderful. If you had not been injured and you hadn't lost, you know, part of your leg, you know,
yes, ma'am.
Would you have left the gang lifestyle? Would you have left on your own?
No.
Okay.
No, ma'am. I had no desire to change until all that happened to me. You know, I mean, you have to take the good with the bad. You know, and I mean, even though my situation where my shootout, you know, took a part of my limb and really tore my body up, I seen much worse to happen to some of my friends or some of the people that I was running the street with. So not only that, like I said, I mean, even after that, I went right back to the street. So it just made me a little bit more violent, a little bit more cold-hearted after the whole incident. You know, like, okay, I've been shot. I died three times on the operating table legally. You know, I mean, I've seen heaven and hell, so I'm like, what else can happen to me? So I guess even with that, it took the words of a child to really break through the coldness that I had in my heart for me to even start trying to change.
You're a minister now, Minister O'Reilly.
Yes, I'm actually a pastor.
A pastor, yes. Do you want to talk about, would you like to tell the name of your church?
It's Shore Foundation Incorporation Ministries of Lawton, Oklahoma. I'm over the local ministry, but I also sit on the corporate board. We have about 9 to 10 other churches that's up under us. You know, my bishop, Dr. Bishop Wendell Davis and First Lady Davis, when they heard my testimony, you know, they was very impressed. You know, because at that time, even with me coming out here, only thing I just wanted to live is in peace. You know, I wasn't thinking about nobody's mentoring, no program, no saving nobody's life. You know, I know I got tired and being sick and tired. So once I linked up with them, I started working towards the ministry. Had an opportunity to move to Atlanta, Georgia, you know, to further my career in mixed martial arts. I studied Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai kickboxing, and Taekwondo, which I'm state champion now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. You know, so with that, I met Dominic Stokes. Dominic Stokes is the founder of Teen Coalition, which he's the film director for the documentary that I'm in that's called If Streets Could Talk. You know, and just having that much influence and seeing what he was doing, and when he pulled me to the side and talked to me about what he was doing, you know, instantly I fell in love with it. You know, so, I mean.
All right.
Ma'am?
I was just saying, all right.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
yeah,
I mean, the impact that I got the first time that I actually spoke at the Upward Bound program, which he's connected to, right then and there I fell in love with it. Like, this is what I want to do full time. This is what I was called to do. And, I mean, we've just been traveling and going to different schools, prisons, youth detention centers, churches, city hall meetings, town hall meetings, holding concerts, holding benefits, you know. And, I mean, I got an awesome team in Atlanta, you know, but I got an awesome team out here in Lawton, Oklahoma now, too.
Okay, so they're really working hard to improve the lives of the youth inmates. Make I guess what you call it, the streets safer for people, you know, in people who are, you know, not part of a gang. Okay. That's good.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So, what type of signs should parents be aware of or look for that would let them know that their child or children are involved in a gang?
First of all, you have to spend real time of watching who your kids hang around. You know, I mean, that old saying that birds of a like flock together. Meaning if your child is hanging out with kids that's gang active or with the streets called loking means that they're not officially a gang member, but they do gang activities. Because what a lot of people don't know, it's not a crime to be a gang. You know, you need three or more people, and you have to do criminal activity to be labeled as a gang. But now, the way the law's passed, three people commit a crime, that's called organized crime. So not only are you being hit with the charge say if you're breaking in somebody's houses, not only are you being charged with the B&E of breaking and entering, but you're breaking in the entering with criminal intentions with organized crime, just because you're a part of a gang, you know. So,
okay.
I mean, I tell a lot of parents just to watch, you know, for the children that they hang around. Watch if your kids are coming in with new clothes, new jewelry, a lot of money, being secretive, always staying in their room, you know, pulling back, being distant, getting high, things of that nature, you know.
Okay. All right. So, why I don't understand why the young people, young black men in particular, but women too, young women too, would want to join a gang. What is the motive? I mean, what are they getting out of being in a gang? I mean, being a gangster.
Yeah. Even though children know that it's wrong, most of them come from a broken home. The gangs evolve now where they're not looking for the struck in poverty type children. You got inner city kids now. You got middle class kids now. Upper class kids that's actually supplying the money or supplying demand on certain things. So they branched out, and it's really just having that family, having that unconditional family that arrived for you, you know, along with the drugs, the guns, the popularity, the fear, the respect in the street, you know, I tell people all the time, if you don't listen to your kids, if they don't get that a positive attention, they're going to get that negative attention because everybody wants to be a part of something.
Okay. So you're saying that the young people who are joining the gangs, are being initiated into the gangs, are seeking family? They're seeking to be part of a family?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. That was once a thing, a big thing about gangs and about certain colors that gang members would wear. I don't know for certain if that's still going on, but it was in the news. Everybody was reading about it, about colors. You know, like if you had a blue shirt and somebody, you know, you understand what I'm trying to, the point I'm trying to get across? Would you explain what the importance and significance of a certain color to a gang?
I mean, it is repping a set, you know, to let the next person know what neighborhood they're from or what set they're claiming, you know, along with tagging. And a lot of people, which I'm finding out, you know, especially here down in Oklahoma, you know, they tag everywhere now, you know, just to let other people know who they are. They evolved from just wearing the bandanas now. So how many people will overlook a kid in a pair of shorts with a blue shirt with blue shoestrings and his shoes or boots? You'll overlook that, but not realizing that they're claiming a set, you know, and they're claiming something so they can be recognized with it.
Okay.
You know, so that's why, I mean, they evolved from that, from the sweatbands, the armbands, the little bracelets that the kids wear during middle school, elementary school, and high school, because that's overlooked. The rosary beads come in different colors now. You know, a certain way you wear your hat, a certain way you stance, a certain way you'll let your clothes drip off of you, you know. I mean, because even the police are looking and pulling over people that's having bandanas hang out their back pocket. Like, my color was blue and white, you know, and I had it hanging from my left back pocket, you know, where I got up in status, you might see one on my left wrist. You might see it tied a certain way across my forehead. You know, but it evolved from that now to from, you know, just a little thing, minute things you'll look over to tattoos. Everybody's getting tattoos, you know, and it's getting to the point where you really have to pay attention to what your child or the colors that they're putting in their tattoos of what they're representing.
Okay. All right. So, listeners, you are listening to Minister Lenny O'Rell.
Yes, ma'am.
We're going to go to break, give you time to get something to drink because you've been talking for a little bit now. We're going to go to break, and we're going to come back, and I'm going to ask you about graffiti.
Well, yes, ma'am.
But not now. We're going to go to break. So, listeners, we're going to break. Continue to listen to Show Talk with Angela Butler and listening to Minister Lenny O'Rell.
Love me.
right, listeners, you're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. The guest tonight is Minister Lenny O'Rell, who is a gang specialist. Also, you're just listening to Mr. Ivory Bell, the beautiful vocal cords of Mr. Ivory Bell, who, if you remember from the last show that he was on, he is, I believe, going to be the lead singer of the group Blue Magic, which he was before. So go out and buy that CD because he's got a beautiful voice, so don't miss out. All right, Minister O'Rell.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, we're going to talk about the graffiti. Why do gang members use graffiti? What is the significance of graffiti on signs, on buildings? I mean, what does that mean? What are people supposed to know about the graffiti? Because back in the day, it was just called vandalism. What is it now?
Well, it's still vandalism. Let's get that straight.
Okay.
You know, because they're vandalizing people's property. You know, just to be claiming a neighborhood on side of buildings. You know, back in the day, you couldn't touch a school, a church, and your home was sacred, even if you was doing dirt. But now people are tagging just so, you know, they can know who runs that neighborhood, what set runs that neighborhood, you know. And also it could be a message across to another part of a gang where you write their name in graffiti, put a circle around it with an X through it. That means that specific set is beefing or that is put on somebody in that set, you know. So it's just done so the neighborhood can recognize, the rival gangs can recognize, you know, and I mean, they got so bold where they don't even care if the police know, you know, because, like, back in the day you did it. Back in the 70s, the early 70s, late 80s, when people joined gangs, it wasn't to cause terror, but it was to protect the neighborhoods against another neighborhood. You know, you might have had to fight to get from your school to the house walking through somebody else's neighborhood. You know, of course, you know about Tookie Williams, you know, the actual founder of the Crips.
Yes.
You know, the reason why he
was executed by Governor Schwarzenegger, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes, ma'am.
Under his leadership in California.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, even when he was coming out, it was done to protect the neighborhood. You know, back in the day, you did things in your neighborhood, but you still respected the older people. It was no women and children allowed to get hurt. With that, you got a pink slip. A pink slip could be dealing with anywhere from having your house shot up, from you or your family members getting hurt, to the ultimate thing of you getting killed. You know, because children didn't have nothing to do with it, and women wasn't strong enough until the late 80s, early 90s, where the women started putting in more work somewhat than the men.
Yes.
You know, because the men was getting locked up, so the ladies had to hold each other down. You
yes.
know, so the women started taking over neighborhoods. So
yes.
it's just done so the average person can know who's in your neighborhood.
Yes, that's why I kept saying young men and women, because I know there are women who are involved in gangs. Back to Cookie Williams, the man started. What was the name of the gang that he started out in California?
He actually started the Crips.
Crips.
You know.
Okay, yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And he was executed. Okay. I remember that. The man named Cookie Williams, right? Was that his last
Cookie
name?
Cookie Williams.
Yeah. That he wrote children books near the end. Near the end, he was writing children books trying to keep children out of gangs. I know some people were trying to say that he shouldn't be put to death, but I'm not going to voice my opinion on that. I'm just talking about the gentleman who was executed.
Yes, ma'am.
And I know you have probably heard about Chicago, Illinois. I mean, you're
yes,
a gang specialist. You're also a minister and pastor. Oh, and I have one more question. Are you still a martial arts instructor?
Yes, ma'am. I still study martial arts, still fighting in tournaments. Still teaching, still, you know, perfecting my skill.
Okay. So how many black belts do you have?
Well, I have a first degree black belt in Taekwondo. I'm a senior brown belt in Bushido Karate. And also in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it'll take me about a good another 7 years before I become a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Because you have to actually train in that so long, because with that specific style, you can never learn it all, you know. So that's just letting people know that you got time in. Muay Thai kickboxing, they do sashes. So right now I'm on my yellow sash on that, you know, because I'm having problems with the prosthetic that I have now until I get a new one. So I'm just focused right now on my Taekwondo and my Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is the style of MMA, style of fighting.
Okay. So that's wonderful. That's wonderful. You completely changed your life. And
I'm
trying.
you
are. You have.
And the reason why I say that, because a lot of people look at it like, oh, he got it together. Like, you know, I still make mistakes. You know, I still bump my head. But at the same time, I haven't lost sight of my goal. I haven't lost sight of the promise that I made God when I was dying on the ground on May 5th. If he saved me, that I would spread his word, first of all, and tell the kids, importantly, how much God loves them, and second of all, tell my story. Because I could come with the textbooks and the statistics, but to see the leg, to see the scars, you know, Hugo Little Bear is one of our representatives out in Atlanta, Georgia, who was shot 9 times, got both his legs amputated. You know, he's a part of the documentary. Ricky Casper was the head of the 6-0 Crips out here. And, I mean, he had more pull than a mayor does, you know. Mm-hmm. So now he's using that influence. He also lost his leg. So we're showing them the scars now, you know, because they're not scared of the record. Because certain gangs and certain cliques that you belong to now, you have to go to prison to even be a part of the gang. You know, so they're still not seeing the violent part of it until they see part of the documentary, or they see us, or they see how much pain we in. You know, my body stays in pain daily, and that reminds me to keep pushing the right way.
Okay. So what is the name of your documentary?
Is you can find it at www.ifstreetscouldtalk on YouTube. You go on YouTube, you'll see an 8.5-minute trailer, a couple 2.5-minute trailers, a couple interviews from CNN, Atlanta News, Lawton Channel 7 News is up on there. But if you actually go to the website, If Street Can Talk, just Google it. And when you go to the home site, it has everybody's bio up on there, some videos. We got with a local gospel group called DDS Gospel that's here in Lawton, Oklahoma, that's just killing the charts right now. You know, we made them part of the documentary. D-Dot from Philadelphia, he did the official If the Street Could Talk video. And, I mean, it's just a lot of information, a lot of contact information for us out there. And then our contact information down here, you can find me on Facebook at Lenny Orell, or you can go to our website, Stand for Something or Fall for Anything. Go ahead and like that page. It has our events, some pictures, some videos up on there. Booking, as far as if you're trying to book us, you can reach my assistant at Crystal, CRYSTAL, 012280@yahoo.com. You can email her. She can send out you some information. I have plenty of letters of recommendation, certificates, awards from mayors, senators, congressmen, police chiefs. Everywhere I speak at, you know, I try to get a letter of recommendation to let people know how serious it is. And then you can also go to Teen Coalition and type that up and see what Dominic Stokes is out there doing. You know, I mean, but 2014, the documentary would be finished and released. So we have a lot of people in it. We have a lot of stars in it. So we're concentrating right now, besides the information, on the entertainment part, because entertainment plays 75% of what's going on in our youth. You know, you got youth listening to gangster music all day. Of course they're going to want out and get a gun and sell drugs because it portrays the good side. You see what I'm saying? Where we're showing videos that let people know you spending years in a hospital, you spending years in rehab, you know, it's been 18 years for me. And I'm still having breakdowns. My leg is breaking down. I have to go to the hospital every other month, you know, where I stay in pain. And, you know, it's just not, oh, I'm shot and I got over it and I'm pushing on. You know, no, 18 years later, I'm still feeling the effects of something that took less than 10 seconds to change my life.
So when you talk to the young people that are in these gangs, you actually show them that it's not just about going to prison.
No.
Be seriously injured, and 18 years later, like you say, to be still suffering and in pain. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. What do the gang members have in common? I mean, the men and women, what do they have in common with each other to make them want to be part of a gang? What?
Dedication.
they're dedicated
to the cause of just having a family, just like your family. If you're one of your children was hurting or one of your close relatives, you'll try your best to help them out. And that's all it is a family. That's why I tell people, you know, we just can't go around saying, oh, come out, you know, because some of these kids, that's all they know. You know, even though they know it's wrong, the gangs are feeding them, providing them with money, providing them with a roof over their head, providing them with transportation, providing them with drugs, providing them with firearms, girls galore. So if you asking somebody to drop that, you have to fulfill that void with something, you know, and that's where the community comes in at, far as hosting community events. Churches play a major part, you know, because a lot of people shun me because I'm tatted up. You know, I don't dress like the average pastor, but I'm going into these neighborhoods and people are understanding. My team and I, you know, we're not looking down on you. We'll sit and talk to you. We'll hear your problems. If you're trying to do something and trying to do it the right way, we'll see what resources are out there so you can come out. But to the people that's listening, I really want to tell you, you know, just saying one day after you put in work, oh, I want out, can cost you your life. You know,
so
first
it's not
of all,
easy. It's not out of a gang.
Man,
it's not easy to just get out of a gang, to just leave a gang.
No, ma'am, because we have a motto, blood in,
but
blood out.
But you did it. I mean,
I did it because I lost my leg. I did it because I shed blood for my set.
No,
I did it because.
What I'm trying to say is, if they want to leave the gang, is there consequences for leaving the gang?
It is, but, and that's what I was going to touch on. It is, but when God opens up a door, walk through that door. Because
okay.
That lets you know that God really has you with me. It was behind me losing my leg to the point I prayed to God to find me a way out, you know. And it's to the point now where, like, to be truthful with you callers, people are never out. It's just that they're not active no more, you know. And they respected that. They respected. I had to leave back a lot. You know, I couldn't take no money with me, no connections, no nothing. If I was walking away, they say only thing you walking away with was the clothes on your back and the money in your pocket. And which that was okay. You know, because the freedom that I have now, not looking over my shoulder, not worrying about somebody trying to hurt me and my family, I don't mind. I don't care if I had to flip burgers. I'll flip burgers real proud, you know, knowing that everything is okay. So, first of all, go before God, pray that he opens up a door, get involved in church, and things like that, because was working in my program, you have so many people that's coming to church now, whereas, oh, man, now you're into that church thing. But I can honestly say they still respect the religion. You know, so if you constantly in church, they're going to be like, all right, well, we can't call on such and such because he's in church today. You know, and slowly but surely, gotta change your heart. He'll change the situation, and you'll find yourself like I'm doing almost 10 years out that now I'm the pastor of a church, you know. So, I mean, once God makes a way, it's just really just let him do his thing and everything else will fall into place.
You know, I understand why they want you to speak at the schools and things like that, and I understand why you're doing what you're doing. I understand why you get so many interviews with CNN and what were the other stations?
Atlanta News, KSWO, and Lawton, Oklahoma. You know, I've been in several articles, a couple stories written about me, you know, and it's all about the hard work and dedication. And trust me, this don't come easy. You know, this don't come
now,
easy.
Mayor's certificates and awards and with different mayors and senators.
Yes, ma'am.
You definitely come a long way, and I understand what you're saying. You've come a long way with God.
Yes,
God
ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
God himself brought you through. Okay. I know I have seen at President Barack Obama's inauguration. I believe he's from Chicago, Illinois.
Yes, ma'am.
I lived in Chicago, Illinois. It was on TV, and he was real upset. He said there was a young teenage girl that was at his inauguration, and she was killed accidentally, you know. And I need to know, do the gang members, do they know that they're actually killing innocent people? I mean, do they recognize?
They recognize it, you know, and it's just like war. You know, they looking at it, you know, the casualty losses. You know, you fire a firearm into a crowd trying to hit somebody, of course innocent people are going to get hit. People are going to get killed. You know, we just had a killing down here about 2.5-3 weeks ago where a father and son in a home invasion was slain in their house. And it was made it to look like it was a regular burglary. But come to find out, it was gang-related. And come to find out, the oldest son had his brother and father killed, you know, along with four of his friends. So innocent bystanders, that's the boiling point, you know. We had a young foreign exchange student that was killed in Duncan, and he was killed by three wannabe gang members that just wanted to see what it felt like to kill someone. And, I mean, this guy came down on a scholarship and lost his life, you know, and that was my breaking point right there where it was like, you know what, I'm going to beat down whoever door I have to get in these schools, to get in these communities, because they need to understand that it's no longer the leopards or the elephants or the owls or the endangered animals. Our youth became the endangered species. And if you don't really pay attention and understand, everybody like, well, it's not going to happen to me. And then as soon as it happens to your household, you on the news crying, oh, well, can somebody help me, this, that, and the other. But, you know, our team is like, well, if we got the information to give you so you can see or pay attention to the signs, why not listen to it? No, we're not trying to get rich. We're doing this because all of us either been shot, got our legs amputated or got some part of our body, and we're just fed up, and this is our way of giving back. So why not take the information so you can stop it or at least protect your home to the best of your ability?
Okay. Yes, I'm just, like I said earlier, I understand why you're doing what you do. You have a concern about the youth who are in gangs, and you're also concerned about people. In general,
yes,
I can sense
yes,
that
ma'am.
By the way you talk. But what I still don't understand, why the killing needs to, I know you said it's like war, and maybe I'm just stupid, but I still, it's hard for me to understand how these young people who are probably still teenagers, and some of them are adults, on up in age. I mean,
yes, ma'am.
when you, I don't understand why they're killing each other and killing other people. That I understand what war is, you know, like Iraq, Afghanistan, but
because that's the value of their lives right now. If you look on the documentary, or if you go up on YouTube and type in "If the Street Can Talk" and look at the trailers, you know, or go up on my wall, Lenny O'Rell, or you go to Dominic Stokes, and you'll see the little snippets of interviews. You know, we had one person, I think the kid was 16 years old, with an AK-47, over thousands of rounds, Tommy gun clips, police-issued sawed-off pumps, handguns, and this kid is no older than 16 but got more hardware than the local police department. You know, but this is their reality to protect their product that they're selling. You know, and the number one drug now is not drugs, it's sex trafficking. You know, so half of these kids that's getting kidnapped, they're not being murdered. They're being taken, they're being sold, and they're being sold repeatedly. Because you think about it, if you have some drugs, you might make a couple $1,000s off of it, but you got to constantly find a good source. But if you take a child and you have them soliciting themselves and selling themselves, you can make a couple $1,000s in one night, and the only thing they need is just soap, water, and makeup. So that became a new drug, so they're willing to do whatever they have to do to protect that. And you have to understand, back in my day when I was coming up, you committed a crime and went to court, they either gave you two choices, prison or military. And I really think that we need to talk to our state senators and our congressmen and our mayors again to reinforce that law to show these kids what real war is about, where you go to a third world country and they're fighting for a bowl of rice, where you can be murdered over food, where you having napalm bombs or bombs being dropped, or you seeing your best brother in arms blowing up in front of you. But then they come home with post-traumatic stress disorder. They come home with mental issues behind seeing that much violence. But yet, you know, when they took that away, they left no kid no choice of outlets, because you have some children that won't exceed in school. You have some children that won't get a scholarship. You know, and at the time, military was their only way out. You know, and when they took that out, when we took prayer out of school, you know, I mean, I tell my children, regardless of what, you pray. You know, you give God all praise, honor, and glory. You know, when we took out the disciplinary in our schools, because when I was coming up, you was allowed to go to the principal office and get spanked. Nowadays, kids got it's so many laws where you spank a kid or grab a kid too wrong in school, you got DHS at your office. You got charges being pended on you. But as soon as that child hurts somebody or kills somebody or do something, oh, can you please help me? Can you please? We need a mentorship program. But when we was like, well, wait a minute, when we had the answers, you wasn't liking the results because you felt as though somebody was telling you how to be a parent. It takes a village to raise a child, you know, and I'll tell anybody real quick, I deal with my children in public, behind closed doors, you know, because you know what? My children will not be a statistic. You know, they will not. And here go the phone after I punish you if you want to call the police. You know, and I'll have your bags packed and they can deal with you. But, yeah, I understand there's a difference between discipline and abuse. Don't get me wrong. You know, to discipline a child, we forgot about the big mamas. The big mama's at the club partying with the grandchildren now.
Yeah.
You know, you having babies. You having fathers getting high and drinking with their children. You know, I mean, I found my daughter, my oldest daughter, a couple years ago since the last time we talked. And she's here with me now. And, I mean, she works full-time. She goes to college full-time. You know, and she's better in her life. She don't have no children, no arrest record, no STDs. She's not out there. And so I give her the freedom as a 19-year-old now of us missing 11 years, and I'm so proud of her, you know, because I had her at 16 going on 17, you know, and she don't have no children. So I'm like, you beat the odds, you know. So I tell parents, You know, don't be a child's friend. Be a parent.
That's right. That's right. Okay, we're going to take a break and let Ms. Minister Lynn O'Rell take a break, too. And I'm going to play some by Mr. Ivory Bell, who's been on the show before. Listen to these beautiful vocal cords of the very talented and gifted Mr. Ivory Bell.
Everybody wants to do this full time. Everybody's made sacrifices to do this full time, you know. And, I mean, it's necessary. The information, you got Dominic Stokes from Teen Coalition. You got Art Powell from Gangster to Be or Not to Be, you know, who was up on America's Gangland. You got Hugo Little Bear. You got Ricky Casper. You got Janetta, you know, who belonged to a set. We actually have Tookie Williams' mother hen, which took care of his women when he was coming up. She's a part of our program. Myself, we have so many people that's given so much, you know, to try to make this thing where we're not just sticking in one state. It started in Atlanta. We're in Chicago. We're in Philadelphia. We're in Lawton, Oklahoma. Austin, Texas, things of that nature. But everybody wants to do this worldwide because this is not an I problem. This is a we problem. So, and I hate to say that, the violence will never stop, but we can supply you the information that you need to better prepare yourself and to be better watch guardians. It's not about being a parent, but it takes a neighborhood. We don't have no more neighborhood watches, no more neighborhood watch meetings. It's like you can see somebody's house getting broken into. Oh, it ain't mine. Let me go back in the house. Where back in the day, you had people watching out for each other. And I had a gang member when they approached me, and he said, you know why you don't have no problems with nobody? And I asked him, I said, why? He said, because y'all not organized like we are. You can talk to you blue in the face, but until they're not going to listen to you. They're not going to back you. Because people don't want to be embarrassed, you know, and I'm talking about political people, far as to say that there is a problem. You got Mary Pat Hector in Atlanta, Georgia, the young lady, she should be about 15 now, doing her thing. She first got locked up at, I think.
Mary Pat.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I mean, I love what she's doing.
Yeah, she's doing wonderful things. I'm trying to get her back on my show.
She's
a very positive young lady. I think she's got the, what is the name of her, because she works with Reverend Al Sharpton.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And she's asking me, like, you know, Pastor Lynn, if you got any problems, we'll come down there. And I'm like, it shouldn't have to come to, I have to have a political person come down here, which we're not charging. This is free information. You know, and you think by it being free, doors are open up left and right, you know, but God knows and he has a plan for us, and we're all on one accord following one vision, and it's all going to take off, you know. So we all got patience. We put time in the street, so we're going to put time in this.
So, yes, Mary Pat Hefner is an inspiration to any young woman or man that there is another way. She is the National Youth Director of NAN.
Yes, ma'am.
NAN Youth Movement and founder of Youth in Action, which is a coalition of youth and young adults who are dedicated to changing the world and young people's lives. That's what she has on her Facebook page.
Yes, ma'am.
Young woman works with Reverend Al Sharpton, and she is just phenomenal. She's great.
Yes, ma'am.
She's really taking a strong stand with being right. She's standing for something, not falling for anything, and she's a good role model example.
Yes, ma'am.
Like I was saying, you work closely with the police and the schools. Do you believe people are scared to get involved? You know,
very much so.
Okay.
Very much so, because they don't. Nobody wants their dirty laundry aired out, and I had to tell a couple people that, because, you know, when they looked into my background, I don't know why they thought I was a choir boy, even though I was raised in church. You know, I mean, I have a dirty past. But my past don't dictate the man that I am now and the things that I'm trying to do. So I tell people, if you don't want to go to these places, why don't you help us make provision and we'll go into these places? There's plenty of ways to help us.
Just like you were saying, the youth are no longer animals that are endangered species. It's the youth.
It's the youth.
Are just about extinct. And that's probably why I was so upset by the killing of Trayvon Martin and...
Yes, ma'am. Yes,
and the
ma'am.
Young gentleman, Jordan, I believe his name was Jordan. Yeah. I just got to watching it on TV. I'm in Florida, so it's upsetting, you know. But all you can really do is pray that, you know, things get better. But it's very upset. And then to know that they're killing each other too, the young people, you know, it's real sad, and I really believe, like you believe, that they should not have took prayer out of school.
Yes, ma'am. And you know what's funny? Well, not funny, but you know what's crazy?
What?
The only true person that's benefiting from that, from all the killing, is the mortuaries. It's a multi-million dollar business off of a 50-cent bullet. That's causing thousands of dollars in damage, that's causing families to be destroyed. And only person that's benefiting from it, truly speaking, is the morticians. You know, an average funeral is $7,000. You know, so you thinking for every person that's being killed, come on now, they averaging $250,000 it depends on which city you in a couple months.
And if you look at the statistics and the last census of 2010, you'll know that Black Americans make up 12% of the United States population.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's horrible. It's not because we're only 12%, but we're killing each other off. And again, like you said, the young people are becoming an endangered species. They're about extinct, and that's sad. It's sad to know that those young people that have passed on, you know, that those who are in gangs won't, because of single parenting and a lot of things, like you said, children, having children, they won't know what it's like to sit at a table with mom, dad, sister, brother, you know, like that. They don't know what that is these days, and I think that's tragic.
Even
within my own
school.
Family. But
I ask people in school, how many family members sit together as a family and have dinner? They looked at me like I was crazy, like, what's that? In my household, we sit together, you know, at dinner time, cell phones go off, TVs go off, and that's where, you know, if parents don't know where to start there first. Find out what's going on in your kid's life. Be nosy, look in a room. Make sure you understand what friends they're hanging around. You know, don't nobody have freedom. Don't no kid have freedom in my house unless they're outside of my house paying their own bills, and then they got freedom because I'll respect their house. But until they move out, you have no freedom like that in my house. I need to know who you bringing over. I want to know their family. I want to know what their mom and dad do. I need to know all that because that's the way my mother raised me, and that's the way we need to get back to America. You know, I mean, with our program, you know, we deal with peer pressuring, life choices, entrepreneurship, because even doing drugs and doing criminal activity, that's still a business. So if you got business mind to work in the street, you can do something positive, you know.
Like become an entrepreneur with a restaurant or
yes.
something like that.
Yes, ma'am, like Team Coalition.
Store.
Yes, ma'am. Dominic Stokes, what he does, he takes the youth, and he has a water ice business where in Atlanta, Georgia, he gets these inner-city youth. They help make money with the water ice, and they get to keep the profit. You know, so the harder they grind, the more money that they can make. It's a big difference from making $100 a day to a couple thousand dollars a day. But by the end of the day, you feel better, you know, and it's working. So I tell people in the community, find something that the kids can do. You know, support your local schools when they host an event or your local communities or your city hall members when your city or your state or whatever is having an event. Take your kids to see something different than just shootouts that they having on the block or little Ray Ray up the street that's driving a $100,000 car, because if you don't, little Ray Ray is going to pull your kid out the house. Kid is lost in the street. They lost for a minute.
So we have about 90 seconds left. If you could talk to a young man or woman who is in a gang, what would, right now, if you could talk to one, if they were right in front of you, what would you say to them? And we've got a minute and 17 seconds.
I would tell them, first of all, God loves you. Your family loves you. You know, it's not worth it. You know, just for, in my predicament, a prosthetic is ranging anywhere from $25,000 up to $100,000 just to help me walk again, not including the other hospital bills, not including the medication and the therapy, and you don't have to go that way. You know, that's why if you're being bullied, speak to somebody. It's not being a snitch. You know, but I tell my children, if somebody's bullying you, you let me know and we'll go handle that. You know, that's the first step. Second step, families, start spending time with each other. I tell a kid, you know, to find out a good way to talk to your family. You know, find out, you know, join your local church and be a part of something. Find a mentoring program. I use my martial arts program to get next to kids and just be there because that's all they really want.
I'm running out of time. I'm sorry. Everybody have a good night.